This is an ABC podcast.
Bulova Naka, and welcome to Sam and T's Summer Sit Down. This is our special summer series where we chat to a Nijan footy player and get to know their story through family and footy. My name is Sam Wykes, and with me each week is my Cook Island Kiwi, Tini Rau Aronatui.
Kia ora, Sammy. Man, it's been so cool to go deep on so many great stories. They're all up on the Nijan Footy podcast, so listen back to ones like Will Hopuate, Keith Peters, Mal Kawa, Salatonga Tuki, and more. Sammy, who do we have this week?
Well, T, there aren't too many players on this planet who get compared to the great Jonah Lomu, but honestly, our next guest has definitely earned the right to be mentioned in the same breath as the great man. During his career, he was a powerhouse winger, weighed in at about 120 to... I'd say 140 kilos.
That's a big range, that's 20 kilos.
I know, mate. That's where he fluctuated, but what didn't slow him down, the man could move. He's represented some of the biggest clubs in the world, including the Crusaders, Montpellier, Leicester Tigers, and eventually wrapped up his career with the New South Wales Waratahs in 2023. He's also represented the Flying Fijians, including the time in the 2015 Rugby World Cup. Let's get to him now. Nemani Nondolo Dolovina. Welcome to Nijan Footy, bro. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
Bulla boys, thanks for having me on board.
Don't sound too excited, mate, from that intro. Holy, I've just pumped up your tyres.
He's shocked, mate. He's shocked.
He's not happy about the fluctuation in weight, eh?
He's still thinking 120, 140, come on, man.
Hey, we want to talk about your whole sort of setup, family into your career. You're from the village of Namatakula and Nandrunga. How good's my pronunciation, by the way? It's not bad. But yeah, what's it like on the Coral Coast there?
Yeah, man, well, I'm from Namatakula village in Barawi Nawasar, and look, it's renowned to be called the, it's got a nickname over the years called the Rugby Factory. So it churns out some names, you know, that have gone on to do some good things in the game. You know, your Tungiris, your Kurindranis, your Mbatimbasangas, some of them have, you know, donned the Australian jersey as well. So, you know, fortunate, my father played rugby, which brought us over to Brisbane back in the days, and when I was born, I think, 3 months old, we moved over to Brisbane. And so I never really got to grow up in the village, but every opportunity we got, we were always back in the village. And all I've ever known was a rugby ball growing up. And, you know, when you sort of grow up with your uncles and cousins that play the game, you know, it was only natural to sort of follow suit. And thankfully, you know, I got to make a career out of it.
Do you know what the reason was for your family to move from Fiji to Brisbane?
Yeah, so my old man was a police officer in Fiji, and he got an opportunity to go over to play for the GPS club in Brisbane. He actually went over there for a sevens tournament back in the days, and it actually started with one of my uncles. He's Lotte Tungiri, not the one you all know. There's a senior. He's passed away, bless him, and he bought his cousins, I guess, over to Brisbane. They all played at the GPS club. When they came over, that's how it started. And then Dad, you know, he played on the wing, tore it up, and then his rugby went well. And then he ended up playing for Queensland. You know, if that didn't happen, I guess I probably would have been, growing up in the village. And so a lot of my uncles moved over to Brisbane in the 80s. And, you know, there's a bit of a small Fijian community there. It's gone big now, but back in the days, it was that's what brought us over to Australia was rugby.
How many at that time was there in terms of establishing that Fijian community with your family in Brisbane?
Oh, look, for the old heads that know rugby, when the Fijian community came over, it was, you know, the who's who's, the Raulunis, the Mbatimbasangas, the Tungiris. My father's last name was Singiniavi. You know, these guys were actually going on to do big things in Fiji. But as you know, back then, rugby wasn't professional, and if you got an opportunity to get off the island to provide for your family, and it was through rugby, then so it is. So it was sort of a small cohort of, you know, players, and they brought their wives and families over. All of us were, you know, we were all babies then. But again, that next generation was, you know, we all know Lotte Tungiri, Davita Kurindrani, Moses Raluni, and Jacob Raluni, who played for Queensland and Fiji, and then, you know, myself as well. So, you know, growing up, like I said, it was that community that, it was rugby driven. You know, every house you went to, it was rugby. You can imagine when I didn't score a try, the talkings to I'd have in the back of the car, I told I should just give up rugby as a 10-year-old. So thankfully, I ignored that, and tough love from the old man, as you boys would know.
Well, you mentioned you grew up with the rugby ball in your hand. What was your childhood like? Were you a rebel of a kid or a good child?
I wouldn't say I was a rebel of a I was a good kid. I wasn't the smartest kid, so my old man used to give me hardings when the report cards used to come home, because it was A in sports and everything else was past satisfactory, or whatever you call it. So actually, for me, growing up, all my cousins played rugby, but I played, my old man put me in soccer from under sevens, I think up until under 12s. Played a bit of club rugby here and there, but the onus my old man put on me was to play soccer. And I think I was the only one that sort of played soccer. All my other brothers played rugby, and in a way, it was probably good because it gave me that skill level to kick. You know, for a big guy, you probably don't expect someone to kick. So I'd like to thank my old man for that. But again, you know, I was always, for me growing up, you know, I was fortunate enough to watch my old man play, and I got to ball boy, you know, all their games. And, you know, it was the best thing. I'd go play my soccer game in the morning, and then it was 3 o'clock, whether it was at Ipswich Rangers or over at Jeeps, I was always ball boying. So I grew up with the ball in my hand either way, but I just loved, you know, the weekends. I always got up for it. And I think for me, I was always big, like, I was very big on, like, I used to study rugby. Like, you know, I used to watch the Wallabies play. I could tell you what the teams were. I could tell you the boots they were wearing. That's the sort of bloke I was. You know, I could tell you their number on the back of the jersey. But if only I could do that in my schoolwork, I probably would have been a doctor or something.
Well, you mentioned soccer and rugby union. Surely there was some rugby league thereabouts somewhere.
Look, there was. I played 1 year for the Goodna Eagles. I kind of wanted to, you know, there's probably one regret I have is probably not playing, giving league a proper crack. I did a preseason for the Bronx back in 2006 out of high school for the under 20s. And I think that sort of put me off it. That preseason, even till now, was the hardest preseason I've ever done. They didn't care about your well-being. So I always respect leaguers who have to do preseason. That was about it. But I never really took it seriously. It was always, my old man always put us in rugby union. My younger brothers played league, a lot of it. Chris, my younger brother, played for Broncos under 20s and then, you know, converted over. And, you know, I always say both my younger brothers could tackle. Like, that's one thing that, you know, I'd talk to them, like, yeah, it taught me how to tackle. Whereas me, man, I couldn't tackle you if you're bloody friend straight up. You know what I mean? So that's why my shoulders are like a 10-year-old shoulders. They're brand new. So, but yeah, probably one regret I have, not really giving the league, a proper crack, but everyone's got, their own sort of paths. And yeah, I stuck to union, which was not a bad thing either.
Kaz, you turned heads when you rocked up to every rugby field with families and kids going, man, surely I don't want to go against him. Turning up to a soccer field, were you that side? Like, what were their parents, what was going through their heads? Like, going, where's this? Surely he's not playing soccer.
Yeah, no, I'll still never forget this day. I was at an under-8s carnival for St. Helens. They're in this club in Ipswich growing up. So they're called Ipswich Knights now. So I went to an under-8s tournament, and I was carving up. I was scoring goals after goals, and then came to the finals. Oh, man, I still remember this. I cried because they wouldn't let me play because they had I didn't have my birth certificate back then. But then, get this, back then, my parents never used to take me to the games. My coach would just pick me up and just take me. So calling up my parents were like, don't worry, don't let him play. So, you know, it was one of those things. So I remember getting home, and then we didn't win. No, they ended up playing me, but they said you could only play in the second half. So I was like, sweet, we still won. I went home, and my dad goes, hey, what did you get in trouble for? And I was like, huh? No, I didn't get in trouble. He was like, why didn't you take your ID? And I was like, mate, I'm 8 years old. I'm not pro. So, you get in trouble for, just being yourself. So, that was part of my upbringing. But, mate, to this day, I'll never forget it. Every time, if I'm in Brisbane and I'll pass that soccer stadium or that field, I'm always like, I remember that time.
When you look back at your sport when you're a young kid playing soccer and rugby union and a little sprinkle of rugby league, who was your biggest inspiration?
Well, first of all, my old man. I think watching him play, and by then my old man was probably, you know, towards the end of his career and he's just playing club. But I think my old man was probably one guy that I looked to because even though he was in his mid-30s, he was still playing first grade, you know, in the Queensland comp. And I'll never forget. He always, you know, and then he'd do those ones. You'd play there, then you go play subbies. You know, you sort of wither away. You sort of sail into the sunset by going to play for lower divisions. But he was very competitive, my old man. And I remember he always used to tell me, he used to work in the prison office. He was a prison officer, 12-hour shifts. And then he'd come and we'd always go down to Goodna. There's a field down there, down by the train station. He always used to run. And I just remember, you know, he used to take us with him. And I remember racing him, and it always used to beat us, you know what I mean? So I guess he instilled that sort of determination to not settle for anything less. And looking back on it now, you know, it sort of like hits you differently, if that makes sense. And I guess life would have been different. But, yeah, my old man was probably someone that I really looked up to. And, you know, so when he always used to tell me, you know, how to play and what to do and stuff, it hit different because he actually lived that. If that makes sense. He sort of played at that level. And, yeah, he instilled a lot of that into me, which, you know, I got to, so I guess, carry on in my career.
I just want to ask, from your dad, did he have that Fijian bump off as well? The one where you go pretend to palm and then you go low and then you've got that like forearm under, like almost like an uppercut palm. Did he have that attribute as well that you used to bump everyone off with?
The bicep palm.
The bicep palm. You know where they go low? Bink.
Yeah, no. Unfortunately, no. He actually, mate, he was actually really quick. So he was, they used to call him, he had a nickname down at Jeeps Rugby when he was playing in Brisbane. They used to call him the Black Panther. or the Black Flash or something. Anyway, so he was rapid. He was quick. So he probably didn't have to do that because he was too quick. It was more I did that because, well, hello, look at my size. And, you know, I'm not the fastest swinger. So I had to come up with ways, you know. I had to come up with ways to sort of beat the dragon. So, yeah, no, he didn't have that.
Oh, it was famous, that bump off.
All right, you're listening to Sam and T Summer Sit Downs. And this week we are joined by Big Nems. Let's get to your footy now. Were you always a super large kid playing footy and dominating all the young small kids up at Brisbane?
Yeah, I guess so. It was. I was always a big lad. I wasn't a small guy, but it wasn't like union. Yeah, I was a big lad, but it wasn't until I went and played league for that 1 year. It was under 12s, and I can tell you now, I swear some of those guys were 15, 16, those big Samoans and Tongan lads. They had me playing at fullback because I was actually the smallest. So.
Find that
always had size.
That's but, a lie.
I tell you a story though. I'll tell you a quick one. My cousins always used to call me a cat because I used to always hate going into contact, being a big guy. So one of my cousins would always just tell me, "You used to be a cat when you were young, man." Like, and they're like, I you know what? They're like, imagine if you could just put some grunt into it. So I used to remember some of my cousins used to always say, "Mate, if I had your size, man, I'd be playing for the Wallabies." So I had a few of those lines get thrown at me growing up. Thankfully, I went on and played internationals and they didn't. So I took their words of advice.
Just on that, what advice would you give a young kid, you know, that are bigger than their teammates but probably don't have that aggression at a young age? How do we try to keep encouraging them instead of trying to put them down as young kids?
Well, for starters, I think the biggest thing, you know, and like, it's funny you say this because I've got a young fella as well and he's, you know, he's 5 and, you know, he's a big kid as well. And the thing is that maybe for me, if I was to tell any young kids, just enjoy your rugby. You know, there's going to come a time where that aggression is going to come. We always have this, as Islanders, we have this mentality that the biggest Islander, you've got to be killing everyone and, you know, and carving up. And this is where I always say to, you know, this is where parents get false hope in their kids. You know, and they think, oh, they're going to play for the Bronx or they're going to play professional. And that's the total opposite. And this is where we see a lot of Islander kids don't fulfill their potential because of that. Mm. You know what I mean? Because they think, man, you scored a try. They expect you to be playing for the Broncos next week as a 10-year-old. You know what I mean? And the biggest thing for me is, and coming from that, I mean, thankfully, I took most of it with a grain of salt, but you've just got to encourage these young kids because they're big boys. Yeah, but, mate, you know, at the end of the day, they're the same age as every other kid. You know, like I see that in my son now and it's sort of, I see him, he's a big boy, but he's still a 4-year-old at the end of the day. You know what I mean? And as Islander parents, we have a role to sort of nurture that as well. Like take away the size, let him enjoy it. Let him enjoy the sport. The moment you start, you know, and I've seen this all the time and it kills me when they come off crying because they didn't score, you know, they didn't score 3-4 tries or they didn't bump over this guy or they got tackled by a little guy. And then they get told off. Like that for me is, it sort of, it burns me in a way. But the biggest advice, like just encourage. Like just say, mate, it is what it is. because at the end of the day, they might not even want to play rugby. Or they might not even want to play sport. And we've got this strong mentality as Islanders. We're like, no, you're big. You got to score this. You know, you got to play for the Reds next year or the Broncos. And then when they get older, the parents are disappointed because their dreams aren't achieved through their kids. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Probably going into too much detail now, but...
No, you make perfect sense.
It's let him enjoy. Because there's going to come a time, and you guys know this, there's going to come a time where it is going to be serious. And it is going to be, right, your size, now you've got to use it. But that's not for another 10, 15 years. So, you know, if your kid is 6'4" and wants to wear, you know, bright yellow boots because his hero wears it, let him wear it.
You know? You wore yellow boots in that World Cup, didn't you, Nim? So that's
why. Yeah, exactly. Let me wear it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think for a lot of us, just the way you played, and I was fortunate enough to be in front row seats watching you. We're the same age, and we're going to go definitely deep into, you went the long way around as well and broke a lot of those stereotypes of being a big person, but you were so skillful. Is that why, I guess we'll go back to Namatakula. Was there a big base around the rugby factory there with all those players is just enjoying playing footy, no matter what size you were?
Yeah, 100%. Well, because the biggest key factor was enjoyment. Enjoy playing rugby, you know, and that's what, you know, you didn't know anything else. So whenever you had a rugby ball, if you were from Namatakula or Nandrunga, so to speak, all we knew was rugby. We eat, you know, we breed rugby. And, you know, for me growing up, that's all I knew. And it sort of teaches you a bit of, you know, determination as well, because you obviously, like you guys know, when you all play rugby, there's no age limit. It's come in, you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt. So, yeah, you know, and that for me was just having a crack and just enjoying your footy, you know what I mean?
Mm. You spoke about how, what did he get named again? The softy?
The cat.
The cat.
The softy.
Yeah.
You spoke about being named a cat, but...
Just say it, man. You're starting
to say it. He hesitated. He got a bit scared. I don't want to say this.
But... when was the moment when you realised, okay, I've got size, I've got talent, I've got a body, I've got these skills? When did the penny drop for yourself?
So the penny dropped, I remember in 2006, my mum and dad broke, they divorced, so they split their marriage after a while, and I remember going to a Darwin Sevens tournament. I don't know if you know, but there was a Sevens in Darwin that used to go off every year, and it was like the who's used to go there.
The hottest Sevens in the world.
I remember playing in that tournament, and I did really well. You know, I remember it now. It was the first time I actually used my body, my size, my speed. And I remember watching Cirilli Bombo play for Fiji in the 2005 World Cup. And just seeing his size and sheer pace, like that inspired me to sort of want to be there and be that guy. So I remember the next tournament, I was like, right, you know, I had a lot of obviously, you know, and there was an opportunity for me to sort of make some money out of it. And, you know, I was playing in a few tournaments here and there and earning, you know, $200-$300 here and there. But it wasn't until I went to Darwin and it was like, yep. And then I remember one of my best mates, he's actually my son's namesake, was like, even he'd say, he was like, mate, that's the first time I've actually seen you use your size and body and speed. And, you know, from there it was like self-belief. And that's why I go back to saying, you know, to young kids, like, it's one day it's going to click. Just got to be patient with it. And thankfully it did. And, you know, again, my journey was sort of crisscross and ended up in Perth and then ended up in Sydney. But it got there. And that's the most important thing, is that I got to my destination.
How old were you when the penny did drop? Because, like, you did it. I know you made Queensland under 16s, or I think it was, or something. But in terms of other rep footy,
yep,
like, you actually didn't, you weren't the next big thing coming through. So how old were you when the penny dropped?
So it was sort of 18, but then it wasn't until I think maybe when I was 19, 20, when I moved to Randwick. That's when the first year of the Australian under-20s was opening, like the year of it used to be under-19s and 21s. And I think I just hated seeing guys that I went to school with make 19s, make 21s. And, you know, my circumstances and situation at the time didn't help it. And I can't get angry at myself. Like, I hated not being there. But at the same time, I knew, looking back on it, can't blame it, because I'm going through something I'm going through off the field. So it wasn't until I went to Randwick when Duncan McRae, you guys remember him?
Yeah, the 5'8" for the Tars.
Yeah. So he said to me that when I went to Randwick, because I was only meant to go down to play Colts, ended up playing first grade, and he said, listen, if you're good enough, mate, there's an Australian under 20 squad getting announced. And my year, or our year, everyone was playing Super Rugby. Like, that year, everyone was playing Super Rugby. And I was like, I think there was only two of us that wasn't contracted. And so even to make that team, so I made, and I tell Waxy this all the time, every time I still see these guys in the back seat with their all their, you know, anyway, so I made the team.
You can say, he thought I was a tosser. He thought my ego was too big at the back of the bus.
Doesn't surprise me.
With Quaidy and Willie Genya and those boys.
With all the gears on, the headphones. Oh, we know.
I tell you the story. So I made the 20s. Anyway, I made the cut. These guys already made. So there's a 60-man squad, and it's down to 30. So 1 week, those guys didn't have to come there. These are like all the rejects had to come for this one camp. And you know, you just know it's going to get culled down to 30 guys because the other guys are going to come in. So all the Super Rugby boys are playing. I was like, so anyway, I made that first. And then the second one, they all came. So I made that one. And from there, they got cut again. Anyway, I made it. So I remember, and I worked for TradeLink, so I was still 9 to 5, so, you know, overtime on a Saturday. So anyway, we'd be sitting in the bus, and I'll never forget, I've told my wife this. I said, mate, you guys used to think you guys were good. You guys were wankers, mate. I don't know what to tell you. And I could tell you what they wore as well, like the outfits, and I was just like, anyway.
We had, I know, there would have been the blonde fringes or the blonde mullets, the streaks.
They had their straighteners, Quaidy, and they had their hair straighteners as well.
What are they, GHDs?
GHD hair straighteners they used to carry. But anyway, so, and then even that, like, so I always got a lot of motivation out of that, and mate, again, to be part of that squad was awesome, and then it was, I guess, once I made that 20s and, you know, moved to Sydney, you know, it all went from there. Again, it wasn't smooth sailing, but, you know, I got to earn a living and, that's where the journey started, really, like, professionally.
Before we get to your journey around the world, that under 20s, right, we had a red hot team. Until this day, the biggest coaching blunder you'll ever witness was the fact that Nems was killing the World Cup tournament. Like, we had Quaid, Will Genya, David Pocock. We had a superstar team, and everyone was scared of Nems from like England and all of that. Even New Zealand, they go, bro, have a go at that winger. Like, you could hear the comments because you're always playing at the same thing. He's killing it. Semi final comes, our coach drops Nems
for no reason,
just because he thought, nah, what was the reason, Nems? Let's go on to this. What was the reason? Because to be honest, we lost the World Cup because I reckon we would have been the only team. So that would have challenged New Zealand at the time for that grand final because England ended up losing against them. But why did he drop you for that game?
To this day, I don't know. I think maybe the point that he wanted like an all Super Rugby sort of back line, you know, because it was stacked. I mean, I was probably the only one that wasn't. I was like spot the odd one out sort of thing. But yeah, it was. And then I come on 10 minutes ago and I still got told off for not doing stuff. Anyway, I think there was one stage there we could have scored the winning try. I think Quaid just needed to, someone needed to give it.
He needed to give it, yeah, I know.
We would have been champions, but
Mate, honestly, I still tell that story.
They were all still wearing their G-Star jeans and all that.
Shut up, boy.
And the belt buckles.
Yeah, it was everything. But that's enough of those stories, Nems. That's enough, mates. I was a good bloke. I've changed. I was a team man, all right? I was a team man. Looked after everyone. All right, you're listening to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs, and this week we're joined by Fijian rugby union player Nemani Nondolo, and we're going to talk about his professional rugby journey to wearing the white jersey, the famous flying Fijian's white jersey. Played around the world, Nems. You know, you've picked up everything. As I said in the intro, not too many players get referred to as the Jonah Lomu, but what was it like, you know, just being on the wing as we talk about, a bit of a late starter, but really lighting up the world and being on that global stage as someone that was the best to do it?
Well, it wasn't easy. I guess, you know, you always have that. Look, everyone that is big, that's a winger, you're always going to get comparisons to the big Jonah. And look, it wasn't easy as a big winger, you know, and you'd know every time we'd play against you guys and or whatever that, oh, you know, you'd always get that perception about me. And I think that's what really, you know, he's too slow to turn around and, you know, he's too lazy and what. And yeah, you know, right, early parts of my career, yeah, I was slow. I didn't know what to do, you know, in terms of, you know, that kick behind me, how do I do it and whatnot. But that sort of stuff, as I got older, I think I sort of used that as aggression as well. Like, I remember everyone used to be like, well, just kick it behind Nems, you know, let him chase, you know. And the good teams that I played in, we harnessed that and we sort of counter, you know, we countered that. And, you know, I remember playing at Leicester Tigers and a lot of teams would kick behind me, but then we had a defensive system where our fullback would actually work harder. And then in attack, they would, you know, Kevin Sinfield and Steve Borthwick, who are now England coach, would be like, we'll look after you in D, but in attack, you go to work for us. So when you're working like that and you're telling players stuff like that, yeah, you're still going to work hard in D and make sure you help your teammate. But you know you've got that license to make it up to your team. And I think that's the separates the good coaches from the best coaches, you know what I mean? You know, understanding that. And I think in two of the best teams that I played in, or the two clubs that I played in, they got the best out of me. Three was Montpellier under Jake White and Vern Cotter, the Crusaders out of Todd Blackadder, and obviously Leicester Tigers out under Steve Borthwick. They understood me as, you know, my size. And again, from there, you know, when that sort of stuff happens, then it gives you more motivation, determination to sort of want to go hard and play. And that's where, like I said, at the start of the career, was playing in Australia was tough. You know, my development here in Australia probably wasn't where I'd like to have been. But back then, there wasn't many wingers like me in Australia, you know, as in like the big wingers. You know, there was always that. I remember pre-season or my time in the early days in Australia, I had to be 100 kilos and do, you know, what is it, 15 in a beat test. Or, you know, it was always, you were always bracketed because I'm a winger, I've got to fit a certain type. And yeah, that's good and all, but it just didn't work for me. Hence why I probably didn't have the career I had in Australia. You know, whereas when I went to these countries, they were like, okay, we know you're not the fittest. We know you're not the smallest, but you're strong and you're quick. So let's use that to your powers. And so they're the small conversations with myself. I've taken a lot out of that. And, you know, the one thing I've learned is that being coaches is understanding your players. And that's where it sort of was for me.
When you look at your career, you know, you've played over in a number of different countries, overcame so many different challenges. What's your proudest moment?
Look, I've got a lot of proud moments. Obviously playing for Fiji and stuff and playing in a World Cup and playing in Super Rugby. But I think one of the biggest one was making my debut in Australia for the Waratahs at the tender age of, was it 35? And I'm going on 36 sort of thing. So, you know, that for me was probably not my... Yeah, I only played 4 games, I think it was, for the Waratahs. It was, for me, probably one of the highlights because it was a compliment to me for not giving up on trying to make it in Australia. You know, I've got many caps, and that debut was probably one of the best ones because, to me personally, it was like a personal achievement. It was a personal achievement, yeah, but it was to tell myself that, yeah, I made it in Australia, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I know that's sort of, like, weird and to say, but because I never did make in Australia, you know what I mean? I got told I wasn't good enough or, you know, and I guess was I ready as a player? Maybe not, you know, but to then go away and come back at 35 and make my debut in Australia, that for me is up there, if not one of the biggest accomplishments I could do, because then now when I retired, it wasn't as bad, you know, daunting. And I've always had that in the back of my mind of trying to make it in Australia.
That was a full circle moment, was it? Because you actually signed your first professional deal with the Waratahs at that 20s camp, and you were actually behind your cousin or uncle Lottie. Like, he was the winger at the time and some other wingers there. So that would have been a special moment because, yeah, full circle moment, yeah?
Yeah, 100%. I was just going to say, like, you know, then we had LT and then Tamana Tahu. We also had Lockie Turner, you know, and Drew Mitchell then came 1 year, and it was like, so to then come back some 13 years later and then make my debut off the bench, you know, and I never got to play a professional game at SFS. So to have that moment, it was awesome. It was the best feeling. I had my, you know, my family come down, and to this day it's probably one of the best moments in my rugby career.
That's awesome. Whenever you did play those Australian teams, whether it was at Super Rugby or international level, did you hold that against them teams, you know, for them not?
100% he did.
And then take it out of them.
He took it out on us. That's for
wood
sure.
Wood on the fire, baby. Let's go.
It's funny you say that because, yes, I did.
Oh,
I remember we played every Australian team we played. I always just had that, you know, like, okay, you say I'm not good enough. You know, I had to go to New Zealand to try and make it. And, you know, it's not a bad place to go to, but I remember, yeah, every Australian team we played would go hard. I remember we played the Force one year in Christchurch.
In Christchurch,
and,
yes.
Whitey, out of all people, was like, let's go have dinner. He was a bit humble then.
Stop it. You haven't heard from me in ages, and I gave you a call. Hey, you want to have dinner before the game just to butter him up a little bit?
Dude, those ones, hey, bro code tomorrow, bro code. Yeah. Boy, just don't run at me, yeah?
I remember we went out for dinner to Lone Star, and I think he was in his Force kit, so, you know.
No, that's a G-up. That's a G-up. That is a G-up.
And then for those who have been to Lone Star in New Zealand, you know that they've got that garlic bread, the whole loaf, so I fed him up. Took him out for dinner, and then we carved them up the next night.
I certainly did, man. This guy had I remember kicking down to his corner, and we had a kick chase line, and I just remember our two wingers that went to go and get him straight away. You send the rabbits up early, and there's the second line in defence, which is all of us, all the slower ones. He's got past them, and he's just going, oh, man, it's our turn to try. And he's got past us. He's gone 40, set up the first try. I think that was in the first 10 minutes of the game. He had that chip on his shoulder ready to make sure that we knew, because the Western Force was the first team to reject Nems. Isn't that right, Nems? When you went over to Perth.
Yeah, bro.
Oh.
So that's why I keep telling you, my journey, you know, took a whirlwind tour but of Australian rugby. But, yeah, that I love playing the Force. I love playing the Reds. And it was always good to it helped when you're on the back of a world-class back line then. So yeah. It made my job a lot easier, trust me.
And what was it like representing the motherland, Fiji, in the World Cup?
Oh, mate, it was yeah, Russ, it was a great moment. I'll tell you a story. I remember in 2010 when I was going to, my rugby, I'd finish up with the Waratahs and I had nothing. But then Joe Barakat, who's, he's well known around Sydney circles or rugby circles in Brisbane, in Australia, he got me in touch to make my debut for Australia. I'll never forget. And I remember getting dropped off to the airport by a good friend of mine, Jerry Yanuyanutawa. He used to play for Brumbies and Sydney Uni. And I remember just telling him, I was like, mate, have I made the right decision? Have I made the right decision to do this? You know what I mean? Like, I just got cut from the TARS, didn't know what to do, had nothing. And, you know, back then, once you're capped, right? So I was like, am I making the right decision? Anyway, got there. Made my debut then 2010, and then I didn't make it for 3 years. So I went in the wilderness, didn't get picked, and I was like, fuck. So what I'm saying is, anyway, got picked for the World Cup, played the first game, the opening game against England. There was a video on me, I was crying, and everyone's like, you know, why are you crying and stuff? And I think I look back to that moment at the airport, the 3 years of not getting picked, and then, you know, that's all fighted back to that. And I can tell you, man, it was that and making my debut in Australia was – you know, I keep telling you, you know, they're one of the greatest moments. That was the other one. And just to get picked in that 2015 World Cup squad, again, you know, I never expected, I didn't have a dream or goal to play in a World Cup. I can honestly tell you. I just wanted to, I just wanted to play professionally. You know, and then from there, sort of, my right played in all the World Cup games. And, well, actually, I got suspended for one, but the best moment was just running out and singing that anthem in 2015 against England. And, yeah, like just thinking about it now, you're sort of like, it sort of brings back the, you know, floods back the memories.
I remember watching that was the opening game of that 2015 World Cup and seeing you sing that anthem and then watching your first involvements, you know, going down that channel of George Ford, and you could tell that, man, this guy means business. And then that crossfield kick from Ben Volavola and you leap up like 130 kilos leaping up over the English winger and you scoring in that try. What was that moment like in the corner when the crowd just erupted and your teammates surrounding you?
Yeah, bro, it was that crossfield kick. It was, we'd been planning it all week with that cross. Every time we get an advantage, I always just kept telling them, kick it, crossfield kick. We've got the advantage. Anyway, fine enough, we've got the advantage. To be fair, man, I look back, I've been tagged in a few of those videos. Well, I jumped pretty high for
You did. You did.
Like, my vertical jumps in the gym were the worst. So when I used to go back, I was like, geez, anyway. So, oh, mate, it was an awesome feeling scoring that try. And, you know, every time Fiji gets a, you know, when it's World Cup time, Fiji, you know, it's about Fiji, they always show that try. So, anyway, there was a, I ended up playing with a guy that I scored over, Anthony Watson, at Leicester Tigers. So every time he comes, every time he sees the video, he's always swearing at me in Fiji and when he private messages me. So it's good to know that they're going to keep using that video for a long time to come, hopefully.
One other thing. So we've got the on-field stuff where you lit it up. The off-field, I guarantee there's plenty of laughters in those camps. And I gave Campisi Maafu a call yesterday. I spoke to Jerry last week on a separate matter, and they both brought up this story. How they, or probably more so Campo, he would just steal all your stuff, like your clothes, your NutriBullet blender, whatever you had, and just pretty much, yep, whatever Campo said, he was the bully, and then you had to just wag the tail and follow him. Is that true?
Nah, that is true. So he's, for those who don't know, he's my tau vu. So in Fiji, we have this thing, it's called tau. So if he's your tau, he can take anything you want, and you know, and vice versa. So if he's your neta, it's respect. You don't do that. Anyway, so Crusaders is Kempo's team. Apparently, it's his team.
No, he doesn't. He says that for everyone to get his kit, free kit.
And Dan Carter's in that team.
So we got told to bring a training kit to the Fijis to training because our gears weren't going to be ready for a week. So we were at the train of the week with our kit. And I was like, you know, I was at the Crusaders. And so everyone's wearing Racing Metro. Everyone's wearing Stade Francais, Montpellier. Everyone's wearing this stuff. Campo was wearing, I think he was wearing West Harbour kit or he's wearing Nottingham kit. I don't know if he'd, yeah, I think it was West Harbour kit. Anyway, and I'd rock up. So before I left, I rocked up in Crusaders kit. So it's my team, right? So I've got all my Crusaders stuff on. And, mate, I can tell you now, by the end of that week, so this is Monday, by Friday, I'm wearing my village team's kit, wearing my Crusaders kit, shorts, top, and he's running around town. I was like, bloody hell, bros. And he, anyway, I went to get it back because we were roomies. And I said, Campo, give it back, bros. It's my training kit. And he was like, bros, you know what? Crusaders was always my team. I'm telling you now, brotherhood, Crusaders was my favorite. So, mate, can you imagine the conversations I had to have when I had to head back to the kit man at the Crusaders? So I actually went back. His name's Foxy. And I said, mate, I need some kit. Someone, you know, took my kit. And he was like, mate, I told you, you know, and I said, mate, this is what happens. Like, we haven't got our kit yet, you know, and they don't know the ways of the islands. And then, a photo came up a few days later of us training in no kit. I think it was hit the newspaper or something, and he got a whiff of it. And he was like, Nims, mate, who's this bloke wearing your kit? I said, oh, mate, he's only the starting front row for Fiji.
And that's the tau, yeah? When is your tau?
Yeah, he's my tau, so okay. I couldn't say no, you know what I mean? And then, and because we made our debuts together, so we were, you know, we were really close in the Fiji team and stuff, so every time we camp together and whatnot, but, mate, if there was any Crusaders kit, I wouldn't see it. It's gone.
It's gone.
And you know what, like, you know when you do that stuff, you want to give it to the guys in the village, you know, like, at least you give it to them. Mate, I gave it to the guy that lives in Bankstown.
Oh, that's unreal.
We're gonna finish up with a couple fun questions. First one though is, out of all the teams that you've played for, who was your favourite player that you got to play with and why?
Mate, I got around, remember that? There's so many to choose from, man. Like, I think, because I played with some Springboks, I played with some All Blacks. I would say...
Me?
Is it fun or just like...
whatever comes to your mind.
I was going to say Sammy, but I wasn't part of the G-Star gym. there's a few. So Dan Carter, Rich McCaw, and Kieran Reid, obviously.
Yeah.
But I had fun playing with some of the Springboks, like Pierce Spies, Ruan Pienaar, Francois Steyn, you know, different characters, but also some of the best players in the world. And I just got to experience life with them. It was awesome. So... I mean, I've had to pick a top 10, but yeah, those names that I just said, and the Duplessis brothers as well.
Damn, so, I'd love to
some
see.
Names there's some great names.
I'd love to see your 1 to 15 that you've played with, your teammates.
Ooh, that would be a great team. That would be a stacked team.
Final question. You've played around the whole world in a number of different countries. Sammy was listing them earlier. What we're going to do is your favourite meal from each country. So we'll go France.
France, I would have to go with a frites and côte de beef. So a steak and chips, the way they make it, unreal.
Oh, I like
that.
So
can you say that again with that accent? That was beautiful. Say that again.
Côte de beef avec frites, c'est ça?
Yeah. Get out of here. All right, let's go to Japan now. In Nihongo, onegaishimasu.
Nihongo, shimishin. No, I used to like beef donburi.
Donburi, yes. So oishikatta. So oishi.
What's the other countries? England?
England, yep.
Warm beer.
Warm beer. Yeah. The food's awful over there, Ray. I have to say, the one thing I hated about England was the food. No, just dry.
No disrespect. Yeah. I would say. Yeah, fish and chips from the pub. Like, just that was the closest thing to home.
Oh, wow.
Fish and chips.
There goes all of our English listeners. Shout out to England.
And last one, New Zealand.
New Zealand. New Zealand.
Meat pies.
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes.
Actually, last one, Fiji. Favorite Fijian food.
Oh, Jesus. Ellen's a piece of rope.
It's the roti and rice curry.
Say, yeah. Roti and curry. That lamb dish that Whitey always has at the hotel isn't too bad as well.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, that's how I knew, because this guy, when we got to the hotel, we do the commentary for the Fijian Drua, myself and Nems. We can't fit in the booth together. It's a very small one in the commentary box. But when we get there, we have a good feed, and I always see this guy order the curry roti and rice, and, mate, the man can smash it.
Well, I can guarantee you this week when you're in Fiji with Sammy, Sammy shout.
I've got you. I've definitely got you.
Times two. Order up, brother.
Unreal.
Thanks, boys.
I just want to say thank you so much for jumping on last minute as well, doing me a solid. But on a...
Typical.
But honestly, from the bottom of my heart, man, to be able to be next to you throughout your journey and just watch you from afar and just to see your perseverance and go the long way around and just stay in it, stay in the fight through all the ups and downs that you had and the way you played the game, the way you are now, man, I just can't give you enough praise and love for what you've done for the game. So that's, I appreciate that, man, and thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks, Waxy. Thanks, T. Thanks, boys.
Thank you. Good.